Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. My name is Marty Bennett, your host for today's Midweek Roundup, and we're going to be covering three important issues that have crossed our news feeds in the last 7 days. I wanted to welcome all our returning viewers to the live Midweek Roundup chat on Facebook, and also welcome to those who are catching us on the podcast or on our YouTube channel or on a replay on the Facebook page. So thank you very much for taking a half hour out of your busy Wednesdays or whenever you're watching this to catch up on the week's news. What we're going to be covering today are three important issues, I think that one of which has gone completely overlooked in coverage on H-1B policy and the immigration debate. We'll also talk about a recent DHS memo on to whom I-20s should be sent, and then wrap up with a look at a particular state in Australia, Queensland, and how they are changing tack on their approach to international education. So that's what we'll cover today in this week's roundup. And for those, my friends, who are currently at International ACAC at Western University in London, Ontario, I hope you're having a great time. And remember, for tonight's dodgeball tournament, dip, duck, dodge, dip, and dodge, and dive again. So please, good luck tonight and stay safe. And hopefully no one leaves with any broken fingers or toes. So looking forward to hearing stories from International ACAC, always a highlight of the conference year for international educators, particularly on the admissions side. Also wanted to share with you today a couple of exciting pieces for those who aren't familiar with SMIE Consulting, our newsletter that comes out Mondays each week. We're seeing some incredible growth in our membership there, free membership to that newsletter. I just posted the link to it on the Facebook page and on smieconsulting.org/subscribe. You'll be able to sign up for the newsletter. Free newsletter comes out Monday, covers about 10 to 12 international ed stories, as well as about half a dozen social media stories each week. And three of those international ed stories are what form the basis of each midweek roundup we do here on Wednesdays. So hopefully you can subscribe to that newsletter and then stay informed and maybe join the discussion here on Wednesdays as we dig into some of these issues that are coming across our news feeds. So thanks again for being with us today. You may also want to check out smieconsulting.org for any resources, free resources from our expertise in the field over the last 25 years, as well as recent presentations, looking at archives of these roundups, as well as our newsletter. So you'll be able to find all of that on the main smieconsulting.org website. Now let's get right into the first issue of the day. Now, for those of you who have been in the field for even a minute, realize that international education and international students have certainly been in the spotlight, perhaps not in the most favorable ways with the current administration and certain policies that its members of the administration have taken. Certainly, the current president has had a lot of negative things to say about about cheap talent coming to the United States or cheap labor coming to the United States from abroad, and that those statements certainly reflect an ignorance of what the OPT and H-1B process is like for F-1 students and then those looking to transition to a more semi-permanent worker visa that H-1B represents. Now, those who are followed it may have seen followed this story. There may have seen some positive developments recently with the current administration's attempts to create what. And recently, in conversations after a summit with the Chinese premier, that actually said we need a smart person visa, and he's talked in past sessions with university officials about putting a green card on every doctoral degree that's issued in the United States. And also this past year, there was moves to change the way H-1B visas under the cap that exists currently, how they're awarded and the prioritization of those first to students that have advanced degrees from within the United States, not from abroad, and how that will change the dynamic and how those process. There's still reports of processing delays, and others on the far right that are saying that the OPT and H-1B programs should be scrapped entirely, which is just ludicrous in terms of where that's coming from. But one thing that hasn't, I've yet to see an article about this that just came across my feed as more of a PDF document than actually a news article. And it's a story that's not even a story that I certainly hope becomes a story and really become a central part of the debate around H-1B and international students and how they fit into the mix here, is a report by the National Foundation for American Policy, which is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit based in the D.C. area that looks at issues of education, immigration, and the like. Their mission statement clearly says that it's an organization dedicated to public policy research on trade, immigration, education, and other issues of national importance. And for those of you who follow Forbes and the international ed stories that they have every so often, Stuart Anderson, regular contributor there, he's one of the leaders for NFAP, National Foundation for American Policy. And part of this this PDF, I've just posted the link to the story, or to the brief. Basically, it's a policy brief that they released in April. I've seen no news coverage on. Is related to the fees that H-1B employers pay. That they have actually funded, those fees have funded nearly 90,000 scholarships, college scholarships, for U.S. students that are looking at STEM-related fields, and have enabled more than 1 million K through 12 students and 50,000 teachers to receive support and training to enter science fields. And that's according to the information obtained by the National Foundation for American Policy. And these fees have contributed approximately $2.5 billion toward training U.S. workers in technology field through the Department of Labor grants. So really a remarkable number. And if you look at it, I think the time period is over the last 20 years. It looks at some of these scholarships, the scholarship amounts are the nearly 90,000 is from fiscal year 99 to 2018. The K through 12 students that have been served is between the last 10 years, 2009 to 2018. Teacher trained 2009 to 2018, and employer paid fees overall $5 billion in the last 20 years. So those fees, and it's roughly $1,500 per new H-1B petition, have primarily funded scholarships for U.S. students to train U.S. train U.S. workers. And if that looks at that, that's just really the critics of H-1B say, oh, these are just, it's just cheap labor coming in. And that clearly reveals the ignorance of those people that are saying that, because the companies that are employing these people have to according to the government-imposed fees that employers must pay, and attorney costs of up to $16,560 for initial H-1B, according to this NFAP report, and $28,000 for the combined cost of initial H-1B and an extension, the immigration law also requires that anyone who's processed H-1B applications knows is that you have to have a fair and commensurate salary for the position, as if it were being offered to a U.S. citizen or permanent resident. So that's just part of the law. So cheap labor is never a part of what H-1B is meant to be or is in reality. And to actually hear this now, that there are over $5 billion that have been received in fees over the last 20 years from employers paying H-1B fees, for these applicants, that money is being used to answer the kinds of questions that critics of the current immigration system, particularly on H-1B and OPT, and that say it's denying U.S. workers jobs. And the reality is, it's helping to fund students that can get jobs in the field. because everyone on every side of the debate will say that there needs to be more U.S. Citizens who are educated in the STEM fields. And there's countless programs that have been designed and have popped up in the last 10 years, 15 years to address these kind of issues. But the results haven't been there. Less than 20% of graduate education students in the U.S. in STEM fields are less than 20% are U.S. currently. And that's just the reality of where the numbers are in terms of who's getting places in and who's getting into these programs and then who's available to fill the jobs that are out there when they graduate. So clearly, this is something that I think just deserves so much more media attention than it's getting. And in the current climate, I guess it's not surprising it hasn't gotten that. But even in previous administrations, knowing these kind of numbers, this goes back to the late Clinton years, when these, at least from this report. So there's no reason why this wouldn't have been received more broadly. So I really do hope that it does get the attention that it deserves, because clearly what we're seeing now is, as it relates to the immigration debate in this country, those folks that are benefiting most from these H-1B fees are actually international students that are currently in the United States. So it's really are not the international students who are currently in the United States. They are all are U.S. citizens that are looking for to go into these fields and maybe don't have the money to go to college for it. So it's really encouraging to see that these numbers are real, and I certainly hope that there's more news coverage of this, and I'm kind of hoping that that Stuart Anderson writes a piece on this, because it's really really something that I think deserves a lot more attention than it has been getting. So that's something what I think we'll hopefully see more of in the years to come, and I think it's something that will have a lot to do moving forward about how this issue is being received. So in terms of what's next with this, I think hopefully it will start to get some traction in the mainstream media. And become something that certainly you would want to know about and make your superiors, your bosses, aware of in your administrations as they take the fight to their elected leadership, as you do as well if you're doing advocacy on your own with your local representatives. Certainly, we always have the economic impact of international students that NAFSA, U.S. Department of Commerce have produced over the past few years, but this in terms of these international students that go on to potentially get H-1Bs, the fees that their employers are paying are contributing to scholarships for U.S. students to pursue STEM programs, and teachers and K-12 students to get that STEM bug, if you will, and really start pursuing that more in depth. So we're hoping that this will start lead to some more concrete steps and hopefully equip you better to fight the good fight on your campuses and in your communities for why these H-1B fees are actually a good thing, and that the international students that are filling these positions after they finish their OPT, this is only a win-win for the United States as a whole. So hopefully that message will get out for you. Now, next piece, for those who are on the either the initial I-20 stage in your international admissions office or student services office, depending on who does that at your institutions, this next story may not be much of a surprise to you, and certainly you're going, well, we've been doing it this way for years. Why would we ever do this the way this memo is sent out? DHS has been doing a few of these memos recently. We saw the one earlier this week that we'll cover next week on the roundup, talking about CPT not to be used as an OPT alternative, given all the challenges that OPT processing has had over the last few months, particularly with USCIS. So this story is about I-20s, initial I-20s. And I've put the link to that story on the Facebook page again. And this basically outlines best practices and actually the way it's mentioned in the article, and then the link to the memo is in this Pi News article. Again, my favorite international ed news source, the Pi News. And that the memo states that the I-20 must only be released to the non-immigrant student, their dependents, or for minors, to their parents or legal guardian. So it was released by schools. The I-20s are released by schools when students are initially entered into the SEVIS, SEVP, authorized school system, Student Exchange Visitor Information System, SEVIS, where then students then use the Form I-20 to apply for student visa and pay their SEVIS fee and all these other wonderful things. So David DeMaria, one of the thought leaders in international ed these days, very active in NAFSA, also in AIRC at University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He's quoted in the article as saying, it's neither routine nor model practice to intentionally release forms to a third-party recruiter. And I guess that's the real focus of why the memo came out, apparently, is that agents are the ones who get I-20s, and that is causing concerns over data document security and all these other issues that might be involved there. And agents holding those I-20s hostage for potential students, so kind of getting them away from the bad actors necessarily. That's not the case with the lion's share of agents, but they certainly are those that would do that until students pay up or whatever before they can get their I-20. So their students often will use agents as part of the application process, even listing their addresses on their application forms, but the practice from clearly from DHS is and recommendation and basic insistence that they be sent, unless they're dependents or minors, that they go to the student themselves. I-20s do that. So that's not a huge story per se, but certainly one that addresses certainly a recommended practice for documents, and what we really see is, I think there's some other directors here that other directives here that are we see that are interviewed for the article. Mr. Zaveri in who's the managing director of Career Mosaic, an international education agency. He said he actually welcomes this memo, noting that the policy improves operations in favor of where students choose to enroll. And so putting the I-20s in the hands of the students, because earlier, according to Mr. Zaveri, I-20s were kept at the agent's office and students suffered because of this. And obviously that's the real, all the genuine agents are happy on this policy, according to Mr. Zaveri, and I would certainly agree. And this is what I was talking about earlier. All the genuine agents are happy on this policy. The ones not happy are ones that had intentions on promoting a particular school that paid more and promoted their I-20s and kept the other ones in their office. So the power of decision when choosing a school has just moved to the students now. Well, it always should have been there, but you're absolutely right, Mr. Zaveri, that these agents that would have previously kept I-20s for their applicants and had other ulterior purposes other than what's in the best interest of the student. Certainly this addresses that article, that concern, and I'm certainly all in favor of that, and that's kind of a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. I would be interested to see, certainly for convenience sake, I know a previous institution I worked at, they would send I-20s directly to agents. And that is certainly something they're going to have to address moving forward. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, our last story of the week. We're going to be taking a trip down under here and we're looking at another Pi News story focusing on Queensland, a state in Australia that has publicly come out and said that We're changing tack in the way we look at international education, and particularly international students, as an important part of why they do what they do for their state in Australia. The focus is on a shift to talent acquisition, according to the article, and that this is a very marked shift away from number targets that have driven a lot of Australian institutions and states and regions of the country, that the move is toward talent acquisition and communicating the benefits of international education to the wider community. And this is certainly a piece that I certainly appreciate and is something I wish more institutions did in their own communities, is communicating the benefits of international ed to the wider community, because particularly smaller suburban or rural towns, it can often be lost on them, other than the novelty of having students from abroad that they get to meet, and which is great that that happens, but never really evolves into, wow, these students are bringing such great benefit to our communities beyond the obviously the economic. So this tack here, in terms of focusing on the benefits to the wider community and focusing on talent acquisition, and the way they talk about that is that that there's been reports, and many of you have seen these reports about that the focus is really on, oh, now they're overcrowding our cities, they're taking away jobs, and all of in terms of what these students are doing, they're and that's something that they want to address, and in particular addressing skills shortages that exist in their state, in Queensland State in Australia. So this is something that one of the people interviewed in the article, Kate Jones, Queensland's ministerial champion for international ed, she makes the claim, and I certainly get this, the only time we ever talk about this sector, which is such amazing contributions to our state, is when things are negative. And that's certainly true. And it's up to institutions, it's up to state-level organizations, particularly as they're doing here in Australia, to really take the fight to the public and make the case for why international ed is so important. And other than saying, yeah, duh, it's bringing a lot of money, but really digging deeper and showing how these students are, with the skills that they learn, are able to fill gaps in our state, are able to fill jobs, and bring a new, fresh perspective on the world to citizens of our state. So there's some great value in this approach, and I certainly applaud how there looks like they're going to be approaching things moving forward in Queensland. And the focus, as I say, is about quality, value, linkages, and satisfaction, and duration of students. That's the future focus for Queensland. The Vice Chancellor of the University of Queensland is quoted in the story saying that revenue made from international education needs to be reinvested into creating new economic opportunities for the state. And that's certainly something that I think will really resonate with local audiences. And certainly that happens in the United States too, when institutions can point to, hey, all this increased revenue that we're getting from international students, we're putting that into study abroad scholarships or into scholarships for first generation students, something that can show the value of what these students are bringing and how that's creating more value for the local communities. So really an encouraging sign coming out of Queensland, and hopefully that's something that can be mirrored across Australia, but also here in the United States as well. I think there's incredible value in these kinds of approaches to international education, and for the average international admissions person that's a junior on your staff, you may not see a whole lot of a role for you, but certainly it's about managing up too, as talking to your bosses and making sure they're aware of this, and advocating to senior leadership at your institutions. It's about you on your own, as if you're an AFSA member or a member of another international ed organization, using that platform to advocate to your elected representatives, knowing who they are and having liking their pages, but also contributing to the content that they're receiving on their social media feeds and such, that you're making them aware of these kinds of things, like the H-1B fees funding scholarships. That's something that anybody can take use of and certainly communicate that to elected leadership. Hopefully NAFSA picks up on that too, because that's certainly something that would be, I think, of great value for presidents at institutions and certainly have much broader appeal to elected leadership as well. So a lot going on, obviously, with international education, never a dull moment. Certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to join me today. And I really look forward to catching you at future conferences and also looking forward to your contributions to the Midweek Roundup. But I certainly encourage my colleagues to sign up for the free SMIE Consulting e-newsletter, All the SMIE News Fit to Share. It comes out Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern and gets you ready for your week, and certainly gives you previews of what some of the issues we might be covering on Wednesday during this roundup. So thanks again for joining me today, and do have a pleasant rest of your week.